need to have it first.
unless you've been living under a rock, the New Orleans Saints did win the Super Bowl, so we are 1-0 in making predictions on sports games. Yes,
that's right. Excellent.
Well, last week we did cover increasing militarism in the Super Bowl, and wouldn't you know it, watching the commercials, there was militarism during the Super Bowl.
Oh, of course.
The United States Air Force had a new commercial with a song that sounded very eerily similar to Fell in Love with a Girl by the White Stripes. And due to the White Stripes immediately sending out a very public message to the United States Air Force, the Air Force has had to pull said commercial that was only aired once during Super Bowl 44.
Nice.
Yes, so we had a little bit of problem there with militarism, but the White Stripes were able to make sure that this commercial doesn't see the light of day again.
I don't know why. That just makes me think of that Simpsons episode where Bart was in that boy band.
Join the Navy.
Yeah, whatever it was. Like, put it backwards, join the Navy.
Speaking of more politics during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, speaking.
investigative journalists at ProPublica and ABC have uncovered congressmen and women who were going to the Super Bowl. Democratic Representative Gregory Meeks of New York had coupled his offer with an invitation to join him over Super Bowl weekend at a posh Doral Golf Resort and Spa in Miami. Among the activities planned for the weekend was a poolside luncheon. Representative John Conyers Jr., the Democrat of Michigan, had promised contributors a lunch at Joe's Stone Crab, a popular South Beach eatery. Representative Kendrick Meek, Democrat of Florida, did show up at the Biltmore Hotel in Coral Gables, Florida, for his fundraiser on Saturday afternoon. ABC News, which partnered with ProPublica in an effort to find out where the members of Congress got their Super Bowl tickets, also showed up at the hotel. But a surprised Meek staffers quickly shut the door and asked the crew to leave. The Super Bowl presents a special opportunity because tickets to the game are not sold to the general public. A small number, only 1,000 this year, are sold to people who enter and win a lottery that the league conducts. The rest are distributed at face value, either $800 or $1,000 this year, by the NFL and its 32 member teams as they see fit, under what's now a shroud of secrecy. Most fans are able to get their tickets to websites like StubHub, where a ticket for the nosebleed seats sold for about $1,800. Yet lawmakers like Conyers, Meeks, and Meek have no problem getting tickets, not only for their personal use, but also to exchange for contributions that are four or five times the face value of the tickets. On Sunday, a Meek staffer said the campaign had bought about 10 tickets from the NFL at face value for the congressmen and their contributors. However, it remains unclear where Conyers and Meeks got their tickets, how much they paid for them, and how much they netted by using them in their fundraising activities. Quote, anytime politicians are getting something that's not available to the average fan, I think the public has a right to question that, quote, said Justin Kobritz, an expert in sports marketing and ethics at Eastern New Mexico University. Quote, I think it's favoritism. I think it's a way to raise money. I think it's one reason why it's so hard to displace an incumbent politician. They have access to these tickets. They can raise these funds that a challenger can't raise, close quote. Congress is looking at antitrust exemptions right now for the NFL, and even in the Supreme Court case, American Needle versus NFL, which we've talked about on this show previously. And the NFL's Political Action Committee, Gridiron PAC, has raised more than $310,000 last year, much of it from team owners, and it gave over $244,000 to candidates, including $5,000 to John Conyers, the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, who is a point man for antitrust issues in the House of Representatives.
Fishy.
Yeah, it is, you know, a little bit kind of scary. And, you know, in John Conyers, he always seems to be that guy that goes in, you know, he puts out a bill that he knows has no chance of passing, like H.R. 676. No chance of that going anywhere. But I will throw that out there just to get my progressive bones. Or the impeachment of George Bush. Throw that out there. It has no chance of going anywhere, but it keeps progressives in the Democratic Party.
Right.
And here he is, you know, taking tickets, potentially free tickets, don't know, because we don't know how much he's paying for them, to use as a fundraiser. Meanwhile, he's taking money from the same organization that's giving him these tickets.
It's crazy.
Yeah, just crazy.
Well, speaking of the NFL...
the labor bargaining issue that's the ongoing saga of
the 14 out of a scale of 1 to 10 in contentious labor bargaining.
That's right. last week we covered the NFL's contentious labor bargaining and a potential lockout in 2011. The NBA is in a similar situation as their contract expires July 1st, 2011. An NBA office executive described the document the commissioner's office delivered to the union to start labor negotiations. This is his quote. It's just a photocopy of NBA Commissioner David Stern's middle finger. it includes rollbacks that could reduce maximum guaranteed salaries to almost a third of what would have been eligible for under the current agreement. Perhaps the biggest shocker, the owner's proposal includes a provision that would require any pre-existing deals to be revised to conform to the new deal's limits. Also includes a hard salary cap, which would prevent teams over the cap from signing free agents. The union vice president, what's his name?
Adonnell Foyle,
right, of the Orlando Magic said the offer put forth last week by Commissioner David Stern's office is ludicrous, rash, and unfair. The executive director of the NBA Players Association says the league has torn up its proposal for a new collective bargaining agreement after a contentious 90-minute session over this All-Star weekend.
Well, that's good because, you know, sending out management always is going to send out something that looks like a photocopy of their middle finger.
Yeah, at the very least for their first proposal. Right?
And, you know, I'm glad that somebody aptly described it as such.
Yeah.
Now, on the NFL's labor front, Commissioner Goodell said that there needs to be more investment, and that's part of the reason why the owners are offering an 18% pay cut to the players. Appearing on Sunday's CBS's Face the Nation hours before the Super Bowl, Goodell said that the owners need more money to cover the rising costs of international ventures and infrastructure projects such as new stadiums. Quote, "You have to invest in these stadiums, and that we're in today." Goodell said, "You need to find new ways of creating revenue, whether it's international or otherwise, and that takes investment. And we need to make sure that the owners have the capital to be able to do that. And then the pie grows and everyone benefits." Close quote. Well, here's the thing. Why should the players and the fans have to pay for games that they're going to be played in London, for instance?
Yeah.
Like the previous game. Why should fans and why should the players have to pay for that, things that are going to make the owners richer when the owners have already vested interest in keeping contracts low?
That's right. Yeah. No, and I mean, it's just the way he's describing it, right? I mean, he's making it sound like some kind of transnational corporation, you know, like talking about building infrastructure and their, you know, international, you know, all this stuff. It's not like a multinational oil company or anything. This is an athletic league.
Yeah.
You know, let's keep things in perspective here.
And, you know, and all this talk of the owners crying poor, it really gets to be some problems when you look at Roger Goodell's new contract and some issues related to that. If you want to take that, David?
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the Roger Goodell has been given a 5-year contract running until March 2015, and the NFL said a year ago that Goodell voluntarily took a cut of 20% to 25%, and that he and other league executives were freezing their salaries for 2009. That announcement was made at the same time the league announced it cut 169 jobs through buyouts, layoffs, and other staff reductions, a drop of just over 15% of a workforce that had been 1,100. The tax return for the year ending last March 31st showed Goodell made $9,759,000, of which $2.9 million was salary and $6.55 million was bonus and incentive compensation. I think Roger and his team run the entire business in a way that in today's economic environment is just outstanding. This is a quote from one owner. The quote goes on, "And I'm comfortable with the way we're rewarding him. He, on his own, declined to take a bonus that we wanted to give him last year because he didn't think it was appropriate." Compensations listed for other top officials included Executive Vice President of Media Steve Bornstein, $7,478,000, Executive Vice President and General Counsel Jeff Pash, $4,845,000, Executive Vice President of Business Ventures Eric Grubman, $4,453,000, Executive Vice President for Public Relations and Government Relations, Joe Brown, $1,741,000. Can you see where this is going? Executive Vice President of Football Operations, Ray Anderson, $1,158,000. And Chief Financial Officer, Anthony Noto, $853,000. So they're making big bucks. In a separate filing, Executive Vice President Harold Henderson was listed at $2,087,000. So
that's good. He's taking a pay freeze.
You know, yes.
How do you live on $9 million?
How's a fella get by? Yeah.
He can't buy six boats.
That's right. I mean, he may have to fly in a Citation III private jet instead of a Citation V this year. You know, it's sad.
Yeah,
it's really sad.
Won't somebody think of our corporate overlords?
That's right.
Speaking of obscene amounts of money and players getting screwed, a Nevada district court has ruled that Ed O'Bannon can continue with his class action lawsuit against the NCAA. O'Bannon was a old school college basketball player for years. The case concerns the NCAA's use of former players' likenesses in commercials, video games, merchandise, etc., which is a $4 billion market, of which the players see $0.00. As Dan Wetzel at Yahoo Sports wrote about this lawsuit's potential ramifications, quote, consider the famous play such as Christian Laettner's buzzer-beating three-pointer that lifted Duke past Kentucky in the 1992 NCAA tournament. The footage has been sold by the NCAA to be used in commercial advertisements for nearly two decades. In most cases, neither Laettner nor any other player in the footage has been paid. The O'Bannon lawsuit could cause the NCAA to retroactively compensate everyone in the highlight, the UK players guarding Laettner, the bench players celebrating Duke's teammates, etc., for a cut of the revenue advertisements using that footage generated, close quote. So that would be very interesting if these student athletes are actually going to start seeing money from their likenesses being used to make the NCAA.
Yeah. No, I mean it's getting to be a real moneymaker. I mean, university athletic programs are almost in business. You know, and this is it's crazy. You know, but let's see, what else do we have? University of North Carolina men's basketball coach Roy Williams is having some problems. Currently, the team has a 2-7 conference record, which puts him near last place in the Atlantic Coast Conference. He decided to make a statement likening his coaching woes to... let's just quote him, okay? So this is what he said. Apparently, he goes to a massage therapist. Our massage therapist told me, you know, coach, what happened in Haiti is a catastrophe. What you're having is a disappointment. This is William's own words. He goes on to say, I told her that depends on what chair you're sitting in. It does feel like a catastrophe to me because it's my life. Okay? I'm just going to let that sink in for a little bit.
Yeah, that's, Yeah.
Anyway, he came out yesterday and made an attempt at mea culpa. He said, In no way am I equating the tragedy in Haiti with basketball. I'm sorry that my statement at the press conference made it seem like I was comparing the two. The people of Haiti are suffering through unimaginably difficult times. I know very well that we are just playing a game. I don't know. I mean, juxtapose that against what he was quoted to say. I mean, it really does sound like he was comparing it to the tragedy in Haiti and was basically saying his situation is worse off.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Right. I'm not going crazy. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And as one of my students said, there's an easy way to spell UNC. NIT. And for those of you who don't know what the NIT is, Google it and look it up. For sports fans, you'll start laughing. NIT. NIT, baby. Now, speaking of NCAA bureaucracy, they're moving to deal with the concussion issue in college sports. Announced by the Football Rules Committee, but it still must be approved by the Playing Rules Oversight Panel. If it's approved, injured players, including those with concussion symptoms... Let's try this again. including those with concussion symptoms, would have to be cleared by a doctor before returning to competition. The action comes about a month after the playing rules panel instructed the rules committee to review rules about stopping play for injuries and consider new rules to prevent head injuries. I'm sorry, we have to have a rule now that says you have to get cleared by a doctor before you can come back in? Like, the guy who gets waffled is seeing triple. You don't know that there, Simon.
Just aim for the middle one.
Like, you know, like, honestly, like, do we need this, like, written down that, you know, you had to see a doctor? Like, nah, how bad is the NCAA at this point?
Yeah, it's a mess. No, I mean, concussions are a serious issue, you know, it's terrible. Okay, so this is, we have this, it's no surprise that homophobia is prevalent in sports. But the Football Association had appeared to be making steps in the right direction. Now, this is, like, actual, like football, right?
Soccer. Right. It's soccer. Yeah,
soccer. Right, okay. We're in America, they call it football. Anyway, Football Association had appeared to be making steps in the right direction. The FA had hired an advertising marketing agency, Ogilvy, to produce an anti-homophobia ad as part of the Kick It Out campaign. But things had not gone according to plan. When Ogilvy suggested that maximum impact would come from having prominent players appear in the ad, the players and their agents declined to participate, forcing a quick change of plans. While the agency redesigned the ad, Peter Clayton, the openly gay chairman of the FA's Homophobia in Football Advisory Group, said that he understood the reluctance to appear, noting, "A player coming forward to appear in it would feel he might ignite more vitriol." The new ad, seen below, well, I guess we're not able to actually show it, features a man using homophobic slurs in his everyday life and then at the football grounds to demonstrate that the behavior is unacceptable regardless of your surroundings. Unfortunately, the FA had put the release of even that video on hold, pending further discussion of whether or not it is potentially offensive.
Well, I don't know.
I mean, you'd have to see it and judge for yourself, right? I mean, you're using very emotionally charged words, you know, in these sorts of ads. So maybe, you know, I could see something about, you know, there might be something there. I don't know. It's an alarmingly touchy subject. There was a poll recently, and I'm trying to remember who it was that released this. It's not entirely related to sports, but it had to do with the don't ask, don't tell policy. And they were they interviewed two different sets of groups here, right? And one set of people, they asked them, do you favor or oppose allowing gay men and lesbian women into the military? And it was something like 70% of people who responded said they were in favor of that, and most of those said that they were in favor of them serving openly. All right, now change that question around and say, do you favor or oppose having homosexuals in the military? And it was something like 40% in favor of that. You know, a dramatic decrease, and even fewer number that actually said that, you know, they were in favor of them serving openly. That's the same. It's the same people.
Yeah.
You know, it's like just it's just a different word.
Get a brain, Maureen.
No, but it's scary. You know, you think this, you know, just the way this is worded, it would be a little bit different. I guess when you say gay men and lesbian women, maybe you identify with the people more. Maybe I just don't see it. But no, it's a bizarrely strange subject.
Get a brain, Moran.
Get a brain. That's all we can say.
Remember that sign, the get a brain, Moran.
Yeah, that's a popular teabagger sign, I believe, right? Yeah.
Yes.
The highest density of misspelled words.
Yes, that was the
teabagger rally.
Yeah, you know, they're about to set the Guinness Book of World Records record for
bad grammar and bad spelling.
Various groups from an impoverished section of downtown Vancouver joined forces on Friday during the opening ceremonies and actually caused the Olympic torch relay to change course twice, a small but satisfying victory for protest organizers, including chanting Community 1, Olympics 0, which I thought was Very, very nice.
That's awesome.
And we're going to have more on this later in our sports hour. We're supposed to have a potential call-in of a friend of the show from Canada, but we're going to take a brief break, and it's one of the few times we can actually play a song that has to do with hockey on this show, and it includes one of my favorite late-night guys, David Letterman, in it, too. It's called Hit Somebody, the hockey song by Warren Zevon.
All right, let's hear it.
So we'll be back in a minute on Not Another Sports Show.
All right.
Thing he saw was the flashing red light. He saw that heavenly night. There were seas to the left of him, Russians to the right. A jet in the blue line looking for a fight. Take care of your teeth, that might work for you. What's a Canadian farm boy to do?
Ain't somebody.
What else can a farm boy from Canada do?
Ain't somebody.
What's a Canadian farm boy to do?
Ain't somebody.
What else can a farm boy from Canada do?
Ain't somebody.
What's a Canadian farm boy to do?
Ain't somebody.
What else can a farm boy from Canada do?
Okay, and we are back after a little bit of an extended break. We not only played Warren Zevon's Hit Somebody with the wonderful tie-in from Dave Letterman, but we also played The Clash and Know Your Rights, both of which are going to impact what's going on with the Vancouver Olympics. As we had mentioned during our News of the Week segment, the Olympics have had some very big problems. USA Today mentioned that there were 1,500 protesters outside of the Olympics. And unfortunately, due to some errors, our Canadian guest is not with us right now, but we will attempt to have her on next week to continue this, obviously, because the Olympics go for over a two-week period. There's a lot of reasons why people were opposed to the Olympics in general. Back to our show that we did with Bob Koalas from No Game Chicago, which unfortunately we had some recording issues with, so you can't hear it, but we're hopefully going to have Bob on again sometime in the near future. We talked a lot about, you know, just the graft that goes into the Olympics, the huge kind of fundamental civil liberties issues that go into the Olympics, and a lot of these problems are showing back up in Vancouver, and there's been a very vibrant resistance movement to what's been going on in Vancouver. Various groups from the impoverished section of downtown Vancouver did actually, they were able to disrupt the torch relay twice, and they had to change its course. Now, you may wonder why people would protest the Olympics in the first place. Well, you have to look at what's going on in Canada at this time. 8.5% of Canadians are unemployed. Canada's food bank usage rose by 18% between March 2008 and March of 2009. So we've got some very significant issues.
Mm-hmm.
A guest on our previous show, Bob Koalas, was quoted as saying, quote, "Walking the streets, residents here are very clear about who is responsible for the billions of dollars of Olympic debt that they'll be paying off for generations. They're outraged that over $1 billion that is being spent on security has placed a cop on almost every corner of downtown Vancouver. And they're outraged by the government's priorities. For example, while Vancouver's downtown east side struggles with poverty similar to third world countries, and social programs continue to be gutted, VANOC, the Vancouver Olympic Committee, is spending an untold amount of money helicoptering in snow to the Olympic venue of Cypress Mountain that would otherwise be a mudhill due to the warm weather," close quote. So we have some very significant issues, you know, with these games. The huge number of people being displaced. Talking just the tax money. Let's just take the taxes first.
Mm-hmm.
1976, Montreal had the Olympic Games. Quick quiz question, kids. When did the Olympic Games of Montreal get paid off? A, 1978. B, 1985. C, 1999. D, 2009. You have your answer ready? It's D, 2009.
Yeah, it's sad.
They just paid off the debt from the 1976 Olympics, and that's what Vancouver is looking at to pay off.
Mm-hmm.
And if the security apparatus wasn't enough, just the real kick in the groin for them, they had to have the Canadian taxpayers pay for snow. They had to pay...
They imported snow to Vancouver, that's right.
Where'd they get it from, like Washington, D.C.? They're going to pay for snow?
That's a long way to transport, but there is a glut.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
And so we've got a huge, big set of problems. The Olympic cost overruns. You know, VANOC had said that it was only going to cost a few hundred million dollars to have their security. $175 million.
Mm-hmm.
They just got done spending a little bit over $1 billion. You were only $900 million off. They're about, you know, just a little bit over $900 million off, and that's, you know, how can you blame somebody for just being $900 million off in their initial estimates?
No, it's terrible, right? And you know, I mean, yeah, there's the financial impact that these cities have to suffer for it, and you know, it leaves a lasting mark on the city, and it's not necessarily a good one, right? You know, we were talking about like heightened police tactics and surveillance that go around, you know, ensuring security during the games, and once that infrastructure is in place, you know, the local police may as well just keep it around, right? So you're talking about, you know, surveillance cameras, you know, you're talking about, I mean, these so-called non-lethal weapons, right? The what's that thing called that they use in Pittsburgh? The audio...
The LRAD, I think.
Yeah, something like that, right? That's supposed to just basically... but it's an extreme discomfort weapon, basically, to disrupt crowds.
Yeah, it just makes a loud
focused,
noise.
But, you know, these sorts of things are militarizing the local police wherever wherever you see an Olympics take place. Vancouver's going to be bad. I'm afraid about Rio. They have a police force that's already notorious for excessive use of force.
And everybody was pooping all over Beijing for a lot of these things, but you don't hear any of these kind of condemnations coming from people about the issues in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, part of where the Olympic torch march was going to go was the downtown east side of Vancouver. And while Vancouver's local government has proudly said no one has been displaced, community activists estimate that over 1,200 people have been displaced, mostly the homeless.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And these cost overruns for the Olympics, having to import snow, $900 million for security apparatus, while they have slashes in social services.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of homeless in Vancouver has more than doubled since the Olympic bid process has began.
Yeah.
The amount of homeless doubled because they wanted to spend their priority on their money on this Olympic setup rather than spending it on actual social needs inside
the downtown.
It's
unconscionable. You know, it's like they're sweeping their social problems under the rug. Vancouver clearly wasn't in a position to handle the burden of hosting an Olympics. And I venture to say there's very few cities, if any, that really are in a position to do that, and not take a hit. I'm glad Chicago lost to Rio. That would have been a real mess.
And you know, that's one of the weird things about being against the Olympics. I don't know why that kid just walked by crying. Sorry.
Yeah, there's some kind of event going on at the IMC, I guess, and we're just constantly seeing kids in costumes walking behind everything. So if we seem distracted at all, our apologies.
Might, yes. Yeah. With Chicago losing the Olympics, that was one of those things where I felt this very dirty feeling that no showers would take away. That, you know, I was on the same side as like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh.
I know it was a strange. No, it was. It was like we were in strange company there, but.
And, you know, you talked about militarizing the police force.
Yeah.
You know, everybody talked about that with, you know, the increasing security cameras that went up in Beijing.
Mm-hmm.
But nobody's mentioning that now with Vancouver, that they've put up thousands of security cameras. And very, very likely they're going to say, well, we bought them already. We leased them already, so
right, exactly.
It'd be cheaper to keep them up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no one's talking about that. No one's talking about the free speech zones. Or the, as mm-hmm. you know, activists like myself like to call them, the protest pens.
Right. I mean, they want everything to look nice and I mean it's a 2 week long or however long the Olympics last, a television production, right? I mean, NBC has this whole thing choreographed, from start to finish where they're gonna. I mean, of course they don't really plan who's gonna win. I don't think, but where they're gonna take their shots, where they're gonna where the aerial views are gonna be panning across and everything, and they want it to look clean, right? They don't want it to look they don't want the protest to be visible. They're shuttled over to wherever they're supposed to go. In Vancouver, there's also a very particular issue about the fact that this is taking place on native land.
Oh, yeah.
Right. That's a somewhat unique a point of contention with these games, but, I mean, to a greater or lesser extent, I guess, any place in America, you're going to have this argument. But in Canada, at the very least, the Canadian government has expressly stated, and they claim to take a great deal of pride in respecting and honoring every treaty that they've had with the native peoples, right? This is their claim, anyway, right? But this becomes a problem in British Columbia because there, if I understand this correctly, there isn't actually any treaty ceding over native land, at least the land that the Olympics are taking place in, to the provincial government or to the Canadian government. Am I understanding that correctly, Neil?
Yeah, it's unceded territory.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, and I mean, while that has to deal with native, like, we see that same kind of thing of taking territory in the name of the games, whether it was the destruction of people's homes during Beijing, just mass, evictions and stuff like that. That was in L.A. We constantly see people losing their homes. What they were talking about doing of getting rid of more low income housing gentrifying those whole areas where the Olympic Village was going to be.
Well, they're not going to bulldoze $2 million condos.
Yeah, no, of course not. They can fight back.
Exactly. But yeah, I mean, you put this in an urban area, and you have to think about which groups of people have the political clout to fight back, like you said, yeah, it's a mess. But I'm sorry, I cut you off. You're gone.
Well, even like all this stuff about the just the stifling dissent of all forms. You know, everybody, it was so posh to talk about it back in 2008 with Beijing. That everybody was getting on it. Oh, we need to talk about Beijing and how they're, but nobody saw it in that wider framework of this is how the Olympics as an institution works.
Right, right. Well, I mean that speaks to this broader issue, China being the international whipping boy for human rights. I mean, everybody likes to basically talk about how China's, this villain in the international scene, violating people's, human rights and whatnot. It's a way of masking, other countries, violations of human rights. I mean, America goes on and on about how, China handles its political prisoners. Well, in China, those are called terrorists.
Yeah.
I think you can see where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, China was not an isolated incident at all as far as excessive policing goes in an Olympic setting.
So we've got, the cost overruns for the taxpayers as one reason why there's people out in the streets in Vancouver. We've got the number of people that are displaced and the fact that the in-need areas are not getting this tax money since it is going to the Olympic institution as a whole. The fact that the Vancouver is going to be looking at debts for generations, just like Montreal did.
That's right.
Taking away, native territory in the name of these games. Over-policing. I mean, we had the International Olympic Committee's official charter actually forbids the expression of anti-Olympic dissent. I got your anti-Olympic dissent right here. Rule 51 of the IOC Charter. No kind of demonstration or political, religious, or racial propaganda is permitted in any Olympic sites, venues, or other areas. The city of Vancouver followed suit, issuing a 2010 Winter Games bylaws that demonstrated to the IOC its willingness to squelch free speech rights. The signed bylaw outlawed placards that were not celebratory.
Wow.
A group called itself the Olympic Resistance Network accused the city's Olympic Security Unit of harassing their members by showing up at their homes and issuing thinly veiled threats to interfere with their jobs and invasions of their personal space. They also showed up at their workplaces to interview these people. Concerns about civil liberties were even ramped up even further when the provincial government of British Columbia passed a law allowing Vancouver to ban anti-Olympic signs even when they were on private property. Residents could be imprisoned for 6 months and fined $10,000 Canadian, $9,500 U.S., for not removing offensive signage. Equally alarming was a provision that allowed police to enter a private property without a warrant to remove said signs.
So these are the city of Vancouver enacted these laws in order to be in compliance with an IOC directive? Is that,
yes.
Am I understanding that correctly?
To show that they were very eager to believe in whatever the IOC was peddling.
Wow. Wow. I mean, the IOC itself is not, it's a non-governmental organization. And for them to be able to have that kind of influence to have an actual, supposedly democratic government,
Yeah.
Bend over backwards for him, and that's terrible. Not to mention the fact that it's violating people's free speech.
Yeah.
God forbid anyone have an opinion negatively about the Olympics. Jeez. Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, we have all these civil liberties issues. People showing up at their homes, at their workplaces to intimidate.
It's despicable.
I mean, it is. It's horribly despicable. And, you know, and everybody wanted to talk. And there's even the legitimate fear of agent provocateurs. Back in 2007, when Calderon, Bush, and Harper had met, there was actually discussions of whether or not there was going to be potential agent provocateurs.
Mm-hmm.
And they found out there were. Because a guy came out in a black ski mask, and he started throwing stuff and just being an outright jerk. Except he forgot to take off his state-issue Quebec police boots.
No.
Oops.
Oh.
So there's even a legitimate fear about agent provocateurs being a issue at this set of Olympics trying to disparage the anti-Olympic movement. And we always get on Beijing about the limitations of journalists and how the journalists weren't going to be able to, you know, cruise the internet freely and put up all the stories and cover stories that they all wanted.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry, the same thing's going on right here to our neighbors to the north, America's hat.
America's hat.
A few months ago on this show, we covered Democracy Now! Journalist Amy Goodman and her two colleagues.
That's right.
Who mm-hmm. were detained for going up to speak. And were told, you know, are you talking about the Olympics? And hassled for hours.
That's right. Repeatedly questioned, are you going to be talking about the Olympics? You're not going to be talking about the Olympics, right? Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. And they weren't even the only ones to get, you know, held unlawfully for hours and hours and hours mm-hmm. and be grilled and be very adversarial about it. We had Martin Macias, an activist and journalist who was also detained at the Canadian border. And the Canadians had demanded that he spent over $1,500 to fly himself back to Chicago because they would refuse to let him in simply because he was against the Olympics.
Wow.
Another activist, John Weston Osborne, was detained at the Canadian border and had a lot of negative things to say about his treatment by these, you know, what we normally think of, you know, they're not the Mounties. You know, it's not Dudley Do-Right anymore.
They're not the Mounties? They changed their name? Or
No, they are the Mounties, but, you
Royal
know.
Royal Canadian Mounted Police?
Yeah. But, you know, they're now, you know, they're no longer Dudley Do-Right.
Okay, I gotcha. Yeah.
And, you know, we have all these huge issues. And, you know, this is something that's very scary and it's very dangerous. And it puts a whole new light on the Vancouver Olympics. Now, you know, don't get me wrong. I thoroughly enjoy watching the actual athletics of the Winter Games.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's the fun part.
Yeah, there's interesting stuff there, for sure.
But these kind of international things can get done without having billions of dollars getting spent putting these nations in debt for generations.
That's what I despise the most. I mean, the fact that it's become such a bloated, you know, big money enterprise that they just trample over people. You know, and that's what happens wherever you have a big concentration of money or a large amount of money that's being transacted. You know, people don't matter when it comes to money.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what's behind so many of these issues. The displacement of lower income people and the homeless people. You know, the fact that the city of Vancouver is going to be, you know, having to deal with their the debt incurred around this this project, that of course is going to be shifted onto the working class people of Vancouver through increased taxes. I mean, it has to be, right? There's no other way this is going to happen. Down the line, you know, people get subordinated to profit.
And my friend Josh just gave me her phone number. Thanks, Josh.
There. Oh, that was a... with 8 minutes to spare.
Yes. We'll make sure that we'll get Tanya on next week to about a first-hand Canadian account.
That would be interesting.
Of what's going on with these games and why people in Vancouver and all over the world should be opposed to these games. I mean, we have anti-Olympic reporters getting busted and turned back from the Canadian border. We've got all sorts of dangerous issues. And you know, like, and these, the actual sporting events can get done without this exalted, like, you know, brought to you by, you know, the huge, massive, profit-driven corporation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and even one of the smaller things, last night watching that series of Olympic Games, you know, talking about the Olympic Resistance Network, you know, where it's unceded native territory. Yet, I got a call from Damien last night. Turn on NBC.
Yeah, that's right.
Why do I want to turn on NBC?
No, just look at it.
just look at it. So I turn it on, and it's a bunch of I don't even know if they're actual natives, actors they hired. I really don't know.
Some look pretty white. I mean, I'll just put that out there. Some look native. Some look pretty white. Anyway.
And, you know, it reminded me so very eerily of that discussion we had about the chief issues mm-hmm. and cultural appropriation. And just because, you know, we had a handful of certain natives out there, that it all of a sudden made it okay that they were going into native territory.
That's right. I mean, you know, and this was a high-level production, a high-ratings event. This was the opening ceremony for the Winter Olympics, right? And it's broadcast to all the people who just casually are involved or are interested in the Olympics, right? That the native peoples of Canada are happy about the Olympics, you know? That look at it. We have a representative from every one of the native peoples, the indigenous peoples of Canada, who came out to dance and celebrate the opening event of the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, you know? I mean, to people who didn't dig down and actually see that, you know, the native people in British Columbia are really upset about this. That's the take-home message they'll get, you know? So I was really upset about that. I mean, they could have just done nothing, you know, and been a lot more sincere about it. You know, it was like they decided to interject a political message, a piece of political propaganda into their, you know, their opening ceremony. And that was just despicable.
Yes.
You know? I mean, completely subverting the actual message that the native peoples are trying to get out there.
Oh, yeah. Well, the actual native message doesn't have something to do with their profit motive.
Absolutely not. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, look at, I mean, we have some websites that we can refer people to, right? I mean, there's the No 2010.
that was my telephone.
Mama, mommy. But yeah, I think it's No 2010, right? No2010.org?
I believe so.
Let me just check to make sure that site actually works. Unconveniently, my computer just locked up.
Sea to Sky Highway Expansion equals 1 billion Olympic climate crime. Talking about General Motors, the tar sands, all sorts of issues.
Okay.
Looking at pictures, homes, not games, of over 4,000 people that were out at another site. The IOC is a global parasite. Do you believe ignite the flame of justice? The British Columbia has the highest child poverty rate for 5 years running, and yet Vancouver has the money to run for this Olympics.
Okay, it's no2010.com was the page that I was thinking about, and that's that'll give you some information about the native stolen land part of this. But you know, Vancouver's just historically had you know, problems with underemployed, unemployed, homeless, you know, precariously employed people.
Well, we've got one guy who's very very thankful. Thank you, Vancouver, for putting the Olympics before poverty and homelessness.
Huh?
What a nice gentleman.
Yes. But anyway, I'm sure that's kind of a backhanded compliment, right? But yeah.
And you know, this is going to be something to watch for the next 2 weeks, because these protests are not going to go away.
I certainly hope not. I mean, it's a message that people really need to listen to.
Yeah.
But.
And so we're going to close with one more quick song, and we're going to try to get Tanya back on for next week. And we'll be talking about that a little bit more, getting into the Olympics and Olympic resistance. Just wanted to hit this quite hard today because the Olympics did start yesterday. So we're going to throw on another song that's kind of apt to deal with these issues of poverty, over-policing, and the profit motive of the Olympics rather than dealing with issues about poverty and homelessness. So we'll close out with that. You've been listening to WRFU 104.5 FM and Not Another Sports Show. We'll be back at you next week.
Thanks for tuning in.
Jobs to lands of despots and distress.